Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman. In a special episode, I'll be talking to author Rowan Jacarello, who wrote a book about last season for Fulham entitled Being Fulham. It's an excellent book as I've read it, and I look forward to discussing it on the show. Rowan, thank you for joining me today to discuss your book.
Thanks very much, Russ.
All right. Well, let's start from the beginning. Just talk about your history with Fulham and also what got you to decide to write a book about Fulham last season?
Well, I've been supporting Fulham since I was a kid, 11 years old, when I came to the cottage. And in 1956, Johnny Haynes said that me and my friend, one guy called Danny Wiseman, could go and watch training. And in those days, they trained actually in the ground. So that was my introduction to Fulham Football Club. And I was sort of hooked ever since then. And, you know, I've recently I had written another book about theatre and broadcasting in Ireland. And it gave me a bit of confidence. It was a limited publication, but, you know, it went okay. And I thought that I would like to write about my passion for Fulham. I thought that Slavisa Djukanovic, after what he'd done with Watford, would possibly come good with Fulham. He had a sort of quite difficult start. And I decided to really risk last season as a season that, you know, might be you know, seminal for the club and tell a good story. As it happened, the journey to the playoffs basically, you know, gave me that narrative. So I wrote the book, which is essentially at its core about the ups and downs and fortunes and highs and lows of getting to the, you know, to the playoffs. But it's not a, you know, linear book in the sense that I try to mix it in with other things about the club, memories of the past, the way the media covers the club, traveling away. I mix it in also with humorous anecdotes, and not least supporters' opinions of how we're getting on. Mixed in with how it's intruded on my private life as well. But so that's really what I tried to do, you know. You know, I just hope the fans enjoy my effort.
Well, I have to tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And the best way I can describe it, it's a journey through your eyes through last season. And you take us through it, but you have a little bit of everything. Like you said, you talk to supporters, you go on the journeys away, you listen to the matches, you go to the matches, and you have thrown politics into it, history, like you mentioned. I'm going to talk about Leeds in a little bit. I found that interesting. You talk about different teams, different places where you've been. It's not just talking about Fulham, it's talking about you and Fulham. That's the best way I can talk about this book. And it really is this beginning and end with you in this season, and it really is something that I would highly recommend everyone reading. And before we go any further, Roland, can you just tell everyone how they can get this book, and then we'll go through some of the chapters?
Yeah, well, the book is available currently on Amazon for a Kindle. It's at $5.99, and as I say, you can get that on Amazon. And then it is also available in print at Lulu, www.lulu.com for $9.99. Okay, and that's the print version.
Okay, I actually read the Kindle version, and it really is just a great read and highly recommend everyone reading it. That's why I'm glad I could have you on Cottage Talk today to talk about the book. So what I thought we could do, just to give people a flavor of what this is all about, just to talk about some of the chapters. And I'm going to start with this one. It's a little bit into the season, but let's start with a chapter entitled Way We Go. So let's talk about this because I found the coach ride very interesting. This gives fans an idea of what you write about in this book. It's a little bit into the season, but let's talk about your trip to Aston Villa.
Yeah, well, I think it was the first time we went away. And, you know, obviously, it's the first time I went away with the team to see the team away. I was interested in actually talking to people and finding out what they thought about our chances and what the spirit of the team was, what the spirit of the supporters was in going there, you know. So that was really the start of it. At the same time, I was quite interested in the other club we were playing and, some of the characters who were running the club, not least, and the ex-chairman called Doug Ellis, who was known as Deadly Doug because he sacked so many managers, you know.
Right.
And, so I was always looking to, bring in other angles as well. Also the ground and the environment, but also why supporters were, going there and what they were looking to hope for Fulham, and also some of the history involved around our opponents.
Okay, excellent. And this chapter really got me into the book. I was already reading, again, this is a little bit into the book, but this really started the journey for me when you went away and you're talking to fans on the coach. And then, like you said, you're talking about the history. That's why I wanted to highlight that chapter. Then I want to talk about this chapter. This is, for me, one of the major turning points of the seasons. That's why I want to talk about this. It's called Taming the Terriers. This is about the Huddersfield Town match at home. And this is when you write about it, and I thought about, at the time, Slavisa Jokanović finds his system, and this is when he decides that he plays McDonald alone and basically sits Scott Parker. This is when I think the team changed. Let's talk about this chapter, because I think it's pivotal to the season.
Yeah, I think that because there were a lot of new players who came to the club at the beginning of last season, I think it was about 11, it always takes time for players to bed down. Probably we're all as supporters rather impatient, but, I think he was trying to find how he could integrate those new players and also find the system that would really work with the combination of the new players with the existing players, So I think it was at Huddersfield that you didn't get McDonald and Parker rather duplicating themselves as
exactly
they did in the Aston Villa game, which was...
Right.
I mean, the Aston Villa game away, it was, it was great going away for the first time, but it was a rather dull game, which was, decided by, one goal, And I think here there was a fluency about the way we were playing. We seemed to have a much better balance in our midfield, and as a consequence, we seem to have more natural creativity and solidity, and we managed to score a lot of goals, and of course that breeds incredible confidence, and that sort of, I think, helped to set us on our way.
I totally agree. That's why I wanted to talk about that, because that brought me right back to that decision. I felt, like you wrote, that he found his team. This is the way he was going to go. And we had that fluidity. It started in that Huddersfield Town match, really got cemented. So I'm glad that you wrote it that way. Now let's move on to another chapter, which also really talks about the season. It talks about the differences between Fulham and the league. And it is entitled Frustration by the Seaside. And this is about that match at Brighton Hove Albion. And your friend Richard says, quote, "We played the better football. They knew how to win." I think that is the best way to talk about the differences between Fulham and a team like Brighton and Hove Albion that season. We did. We played great football, but that team knew how to win the game. So let's talk about the journey to playing Brighton and Hove Albion away.
basically, I think we were a better footballing side than Brighton. But unfortunately, the better footballing side doesn't always win. And, you know, Richard summed it up perfectly, you know. And he's a very informed supporter. I think that, in vital moments of the game, we weren't ruthless enough. And, of course, we've had difficulty with not having a natural finisher in the side. Last season, we managed to spread the goals around, and we were passing the ball so well and creating space so well that we found a way through. This season it's been more difficult for various reasons, but no doubt we'll come to that. But right. As far as Brighton is concerned, last season, at away, I think the first half particularly, we were absolutely terrific. We continued the kind of form we showed against Huddersfield. We were creative. We were passing the ball brilliantly. But we scored, reasonably early on, if I remember. But there was always that feeling, as the game went on in the second half, that they could find their moment, they had a very obdurate defence at the heart of their team, which was very suitable for this division. They were exactly. Very solid, strong, and resolute. There was always that danger that one wasn't going to be enough, and so it proved to be. And then, simple as this, they took their chances when they came and scored some good goals. And it was really disappointing to play so well and actually lose and get nothing out of it, because I think particularly the first half performance was certainly one of our best performances of the season.
I totally agree, Roland. And what's interesting about this is that I look at that match and just it really epitomizes, like you said, we were the better football inside. They just knew the division. They knew how to play and win in the division. And it really showed itself. And I'm going to talk about a player that, for me, was the difference in the match. And it's just about finishing, Glenn Murray. They had a Glenn Murray and we didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Glenn Murray is a very seasoned professional. He's got a very good sense of the game with good movement, particularly around the box. And, he can finish. And that's what happened. We didn't have somebody of that predatory nature, and we haven't had somebody like that for some time. Somebody who you can guarantee is going to get you about at least 15 goals a season, if not more. And in fairness, it's not always easy to find, particularly in the transfer market these days, because a lot of, with all the agents and all the opportunities out there, players hedge their bets, and the kind of player we need is always thinking they might actually get a better deal with a Premiership side or, a side in the Liga or whatever,
Right. Listen, I totally agree. It's funny because I could say that I thought that Chris Martin was going to be that player, and I thought he was becoming that player. But, of course, we have all that situation with Derby County that I think threw that for a loop, and it never really materialized to that Glenn Murray level where you could really count on the goals. And that's what Glenn Murray did.
He was always a stopgap, Martin, in many respects, but he was experienced at this level and had scored goals at this level, and he did give us a focal point,
Totally.
And he gave us a sense of, another alternative. He did manage at times to hold the ball up well, lead the line strongly, and bring others into play. Brian McBride and Louis Sahar—he was not, but he was quite good for what we needed at the time. But yes, there were obviously some issues hanging over him, did actually undermine, I think, his relationship with both the club and the supporters.
Absolutely.
But he, you know, there were some positives that came out of, yes, of the deal for us, you know.
Oh, I agree.
Even though he may not have been the ultimate answer.
What's interesting about him, and I've said this on Cottage Talk, is that I thought it was going down the right path with him, and I thought if he played at the level that he did, once he got settled at Fulham, that he was really going to be an integral part of the season. But unfortunately, then everything happened with Derby County, and he was never the same player for reasons that we've went through last season about, you know, that situation. So I'm not going to get into that, but that's what was disappointing for me. I think that thing with Chris Martin really affected our season. But I mean, hey, we still had a great season. But let's now move on to the second half of the season. I have a few more chapters I want to talk to you about. And this one is an interesting one. It involves Birmingham City. This is the second half of the season. And you talk about the rosy-faced man said, after the loss to Birmingham City, here's a quote. This is what's interesting to me. Fulham, they blow hot and cold. They let you down when you most need them. It's always been the same. You never know what's going on there. And I think that actually also talks about maybe in general, but also last season. Let's talk about that Birmingham City match.
The Birmingham City away match. Yes, well, you know, Fulham, you know, he's correct, the rosy-faced man. Basically, we have a history of actually being very unpredictable, but in that unpredictability, even that eccentricity, is part of Fulham's charm, it has to be said. You know, when I was supporting Fulham, you know, in the 50s and the early 60s, they were struggling always at the bottom of the first division. But they all, like they did in 64, 65, they had, you know, a miraculous escape from relegation, as they did later, many years later, with Roy Hodgson. You know, history is repeating itself, you know. And then sometimes they've gone on terrific cup runs, you know, whether it was under Alex Stock or Jean Tigana, you know, they managed to get, in one case, to the final and the semi-final. And, you know, they've managed to always sort of give their supporters some entertainment in the season, because there was something that they were still involved in quite a few times. But against that, they've had all these other, you know, the history of decline and going into lower divisions and, you know, relegation struggles, etc. So it's a real topsy-turvy world with Fulham. In that sense, it's unpredictable. But just as if they seem that they're going to go into another level, yep, something happens, you know.
Exactly.
You know, whether it is a really good player like Louis Saha is transferred when we're fourth in the league, in the Premiership, or, you know, whether it is, you know, some, you know, fracas that is taking place within the club, or just as if they look as if they might go and win an FA Cup final, they just freeze at Wembley, you know. You just, it's, but in a way, that's the sort of, you know, charm of supporting them, that you don't quite know what's going to happen next. But of course, it can also be very frustrating.
Absolutely. And that chapter is entitled St. Andrews, Here We Come.
Now, yeah, well, that one, I mean, that was another game, you know, where we, you know, I think I mentioned that Zola was the manager of Birmingham,
yep,
you know, a wonderful footballer, but was not getting any results. Probably a manager not suited for the rough and tumble of the Championship, you know, somebody who really wants to play good creative football. But, you know, I don't think he had the players really to do it. And, you know, they sacked Rowett, you know, the previous manager. Which
I'll never understand that, Roland.
That was very extraordinary. But, you know, and then they just descended. And when we were about to play them, I think they'd lost 10 matches on the spin. And then, again, typical Fulham, you know,
yep,
what happens? We're the first team in 10 matches to lose to them.
Yep.
And it was a narrow loss, but we didn't play great in that game. And it was, you know, as you'd expect, quite a rugged kind of affair. of which it was decided, if I remember rightly, by a single goal. And, this is the kind of thing that happens, just as happened on Saturday. Sunderland had they not won for a year at home or something like this? And, you know, Chris Coleman, our former player and manager, is in charge. And good old Fulham, what happens? We're the first team to lose to them there for ages.
You know, you knew it was going to happen.
Well, yeah, when they're managed by, Chris and his and Kit is his number two. You know, so yeah, there we go.
it's crazy, and it's funny because we talked about on Cottage Talk the similarities between the Birmingham City match and, of course, the match that just happened against Sunderland. It really is typical Fulham. Okay, Roland, let's now talk about a team that I'm fascinated with, and that's Leeds. You wrote this. It's the chapter entitled Stopping the Leeds Invasion. You describe Leeds as challenging and villainous. Talk about what you wrote about here.
Well, basically, Leeds have a reputation of, you know, being a good football side in the past, but what we might call a nasty side, you know. I suppose it all comes from the legacy of the 70s when they were managed by Don Revie, who later became England manager and was nicknamed by the players Don Reddies because he was always wanting to do deals with, companies like the Admiral Shirt Company. And, but he was quite a good manager and quite... inventive as a tactician by English standards of the day. But there was a ruthless side to Leeds, which when they were winning, they used to slow the game down by, in those days, you could pass back to the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper didn't have to use his feet in the way that they do now. So much, and they could just keep, you know, passing back all the time, and they used the throw-ons they took slowly, and they put Jack Charlton on the goal line to sort of impede the goalkeeper. You know, they did everything that they were full of gamesmanship, you know, but at the same time they could play some great football, and they, for many seasons, they were, up there as one of the top teams in England for many, many years. But they were always a bit the bridesmaid, not the bride. You know, they never quite made it. You know, I think they won it a couple of times, but they were always in the final but didn't win, you know. So, but even more relevantly, their supporters were always passionate, but, you know, quite tough, you know, quite, sort of intimidating. And so they got a reputation that, from that period, really, I think. And then, of course, they've been in huge decline since because of the mismanagement that took place when they tried to, after they got to the European... the Champions League semi-final, you know, and they invested a lot of money, which basically got lost and overcommitted themselves, and then they declined very badly. So, they're a major club in the country, really, and shouldn't be in the Championship, but they are. And so, when they came to the Cottage, they had a lot of support. They had big support. There's a lot of people in London who support Leeds, you know, because of this history in the past, they have quite a considerable support for a Championship club. And this was a game which we had to really get something out of if we were going to maintain our Championship push. We couldn't afford to lose this game, you know, and we, lost a goal quite early through various mistakes and cock-ups, and they were on top in the early stages, but we came back brilliantly with an intensity and a creativity which finally got its rewards with Tom Kearney's fabulous goal at the end of the game, which got a draw, and everybody celebrated as if it was a victory, but which of course it wasn't. Literally a victory, but in fact, in truth, it was a kind of a victory because if we were still in with a chance of the playoffs by not only getting a point but stopping one of our rivals getting three.
Okay, excellent. And it's funny because that match to me was a great sign of what was to come, and I'm glad that you described that also. With Leeds, you talk about it earlier in the book when you talk about Revy, and I found that interesting. Me not growing up with the history, it's always nice to hear about the history of other clubs like Leeds. I'm very familiar with it, but also to see it in print is nice. And you do a good job of breaking that down, and of course, the home fixture as well. That's why I wanted to focus a little bit on Leeds. Another team I want to focus on is Newcastle United. You wrote some very interesting things about them. I want to highlight this chapter called Tune on the Net, because to last season, generally I was listening to the matches when we got relegated, and you were listening to Gentleman Jim and Jamie Reed like I would be doing. So let's talk about this match. For me, this is such a turning point match because this showed me that we were in it to the end when we beat Newcastle United. So let's talk about you, the journey of actually listening to the match and this huge victory for Fulham.
Well, I think that, I wanted to see how the actual, the club actually broadcast the matches. So I listened to this one I thought the two boys did a good job. I think they create an unusual kind of listen because it's reasonably informative. It's from a Fulham perspective.
Totally, yeah.
It has a nice feel to it in terms of their chat and the way they accessibly communicate with the listeners. So that was good. But the game itself, I think, will be remembered for the performance of Ryan Sessegnon, because it's a game in which he could have scored a hat-trick. I think we showed maybe that when we were on bigger pitches that our passing game, when it was flowing well, made it very difficult for the opposition because we could open up the pitch. Filling the gaps was more difficult. That was just my feeling. But, they obviously were home, were going to press. And so when I think in that game, Ryan was playing further forward, if I remember correctly. And, his pace and skill managed to get at them and score these fabulous goals. And to do that away at Newcastle was an incredible achievement, not least for somebody so young, And I suddenly thought, my God, if this player can do this at 16, he's got a great future, before him. Let's hope that's the case.
Absolutely. That, to me, was the Ryan Sessegnon show, and that was amazing when I watched the replay, but listening to it was very interesting. I'm glad that we're talking a little bit about Gentleman Jim, and it's funny because he reminds me of some of the broadcasters over here that broadcast the local teams, and it definitely has a different flavor. It is meant for the local supporter, and in this case the Fulham supporter, and I don't have a problem with that. So I actually enjoy listening to them, Roland, because it's playing to me. I know what I'm getting when you get Gentleman Jim. Other people have issues with it because they want a more, say, balanced view, but when you're listening to a broadcast from the actual club, this is what I expect. So I don't have any problem with Gentleman Jim. I actually enjoy it. It sounds like you do too.
I do. I think if you want to have a more, in quote, balanced commentary, then you go to Radio 5. But Radio 5 can be rather anodyne, and Talk Sport can be rather hysterical, and
exactly.
As you say, you get what's on the tin, and I think it's well done. Okay, there might be some rough edges, but I think that's part of its Fulhamish charm, and they're certainly informative, and they come across in a accessible and warm way. You know,
absolutely. All right. Let's move on because listen, this book has so many interesting chapters. I'm just going to mention the chapters just for time's sake. A Triumph in Yorkshire. This is the Huddersfield Town victory. This to me again just showed the direction that we were going to beat a team so handily that it ends up being promoted. Just showed you a lot about Fulham. And then of course you have the match against Brentford at Craven Cottage. The chapter is called The Bees Swarm at the Cottage. And I just want to mention those chapters, but let's go to the end and let's talk about the two chapters dealing with the playoff against Reading, because it all comes to head at the very end. So let's talk about Battle with the Royals and the Final Reckoning, and your view of these two matches.
These were very tight games, so much was at stake that, it's inevitable that, there's a certain nervous tension that emanates in the players, and some of the quality of the game wasn't great because of that. But, the actual atmosphere at the cottage for the Royals was the most vociferous and intense I'd heard for some years. It was pretty intense during the Leeds game, but I think that was topped by the atmosphere for the playoff at the cottage. And, the response from the fans was absolutely terrific, I think that it was unfortunate that we didn't get a result. But it was going to be always the odd moment that was going to turn the game against Reading as they were playing then. And I think that if I remember rightly, that the Fulham defence stopped thinking there was an offside, and I think it was their left sided player scored. Was it Graben? I can't remember now. But unfortunately, I think it basically the Fulham defence stood still, and they scored as a result of that, which was unfortunate. But we came back into it, and we managed to score to Tom Kearney's header towards the end of the game. But they defended quite obdurately just in that very last part of the game, and we couldn't get that lead, which would have been so handy going, to their ground, But in the return, it was extremely tight, and the penalty was given. Martin Atkinson is an international referee. It seemed to be that, it probably was a penalty, unfortunately. It was sort of somewhat fortuitous, but technically I think it was a penalty. But we were stopped really in that game. I mean, we had to push forward, and they could have scored some other goals. Right. But, we ultimately were stopped by a brilliant performance from Al Habsi in goal. I think that if he hadn't played so well, at some stage we would have possibly scored and, got back into the game. So, that's what happened. And unfortunately, we didn't make it. But it was by the narrowest of margins. Unfortunately, when these playoffs are a bit of a lottery in the sense that, you're sort of in a cup game, and decisions on the day can turn the whole situation right round, you know. So it was very unfortunate, but the team certainly did everything they could to win, and they narrowly failed. Unfortunately, when you get these opportunities, you've got to take them because you just don't know when they're going to come round again.
I totally agree, and that's what's so interesting about it. And it's funny because you talk about something that I can apply to a different sport. We call it situational football, and a team that knows how to win in certain situations. That was Reading. Not that Fulham didn't know how to win matches, but when the margins are so close, they knew how to win these type of matches. This goes back to a team like Brighton Hove Albion that just knew how to win. We would play the better football, Roland, as you described in the book overall. But there are certain teams that knew how to take advantage of certain situations, and Reading happened to be one of them. And like you said,
I think Brighton more so than Reading, but I know what you mean. I think that, they had one, certainly at that point, where, you know, wily, experienced players of ability like Kermagant and people like that, certainly aided their cause. But, to lose on a penalty in such an important game is very disappointing.
It's horrible, and it was a horrible way for the season to end. But for me, it doesn't take away from the brilliant season that it was to get to that point, and that's why I'm glad that you wrote this book. And not to spoil the end, I was thinking about reading the end of this, but I'll let fans read it. You sum it up in the last chapter called Our Form. And I would highly recommend fans, after you go through it, read that and read the final paragraph. Like I said, I was going to read it, but I'm like, I'm not going to do that. Read it, because that to me encapsulated the season, your journey, and everything, Roland. That's what's so good about the book, is that it takes you through this journey of a season. I learn a lot about you. I learn a lot about history, and it's a fascinating read. Highly recommend all fans reading this book, and I hope that they do, Roland. Before we finish up, I told you before we started this interview, is I wanted to get your thoughts on this season compared to last season, and would you be writing a sequel? And so I want to get your thoughts. What are the differences that you're seeing from last season to this season? Do you see any comparisons? Do you see this season as a different animal compared to last season? Your thoughts.
This season is definitely a different animal to last season. I think our problems have been compounded initially by injuries. A lot of players were not available very much in pre-season. And I think, when you don't get a good start, to get your fitness and, your preparation right, you can be playing catch-up. I think our midfield of Carney, Johansson and McDonald was the best in the division last year, but they've hardly played together this season. And that's been the biggest problem. And Carney, I don't think, still is really up to full match fitness, because he's been, trying to play catch up. And, when you don't have him at his best, the way we play is much more difficult, because if you're playing out from the back, you need somebody to hold it up who's got that ability to, manage opponents and be calm and strong and use his body to shield the ball and then find the relevant pass. And although the people who've come in have done a reasonable job, they're not of the same quality. And that midfield is the engine room for Fulham's success.
I totally
agree. And when it was, and unfortunately, that engine has not been functioning this season, mainly through injury.
Okay, Roland, what's interesting about you talking about the engine room, it's funny, you described exactly the way that I feel, that the engine room of Fulham is not firing on all cylinders. That's exactly what you described there.
Yes, and, it's very unfortunate that a lot of that is to do with injuries and not enough playing time. So that's been a big problem for Fulham. And I think the other problem is we have to be frank and say we're a team that is basically concentrating on possession, and we haven't been passing it as well as we did last year. We're not; it hasn't been as crisp or as quick and as fluent. That means I think some of our build-up play has been too slow. I think the other thing is that, we've had some new additions, although it has to be said that the team is essentially the same that it was last season. We've lost Aluko, but, it was probably very difficult to refuse a deal. Somebody his age for, was it 7 million? I mean, that's a lot of money. We knew Martin was going to go. And I imagine there might have been a tension about Cessignon and Malone because they shared time at, as left wing back or full back or whatever. And maybe it was a case that if we wanted to keep Cessignon, we had to sort of commit to giving him more games. I don't know. That's conjecture on my part. I know there are criticisms in these areas, but the team isn't radically different, So, I think injuries is a big factor. I think the fact that we haven't, through not getting the results, actually been not playing our game as well as we did. And then, new additions, particularly from other countries, always need time to bed in. And, I'll give one example. Henri of Arsenal was not very successful in his first season. He hadn't been very successful at Juventus, where I think he was playing as a winger, actually, unbelievably. It's not easy for people to come to this country and be immediately hit the ground running. But unfortunately, patience is not something that people have in spades when it comes to football. And obviously, we all want results and we want to get into the Premiership and we want to win. I think there's Kamara is a player who might come good in the end. He's got he's very raw, and some of his touch initially was awful. But I've noted improvement, and it certainly has had an influence when he's come on as a sub. And he's very young, and he's got time on his hands. But he's not ready for this season, and of course that's the frustration.
I know.
And also when he was scoring, he got a couple of decent goals, and then he was injured, so he lost
momentum.
Continuity. And I mean, Rui Fonte is a decent footballer, but you've got a sense he might be in the wrong league, in the wrong team. I don't think we found a way to, use him in the best way. I'm not really quite sure where he fits because he's not really a winger. He's not really a striker. He's sort of a player that might play off people, but he seems to be coming deeper and deeper to get into the game. But I'm not an expert, but I'm just making my observations that I'm not sure that he's... I don't think he's a bad footballer, but I just don't think we're using him in a way that, is getting the best out of him. But I'm not sure how we can do that. I mean... Yeah. We played very well, and he was in that team against Ipswich, but that away where we got a very good result. But this might be the only game that we've really reached the heights of last season.
I know. That's what's
and, of course, the other thing is that people must remember that a lot of these players are not our first choices, We tried to get... Roland from yep. then we try you know we th- this player who was in playing in France, he came to the cottage at least twice, I think, so. And then we tried to get Dwight Gale later from Newcastle, and again you come down to the problems of getting a deal over the line, and then I found it strange that we haven't really managed to get like you talked earlier about knowing how to win, whether we haven't got at least another rugged kind of centre-half who was taller to at least compete for that position in as a centre-back, you know, because we needed somebody in this division who can deal, shall we say, with the ugly side more readily. And
I agree with all that, Ron.
That's the trouble. So, but the other thing I think that you know, and maybe even a goalkeeper who's a better with their feet. You know, I mean, neither of the two keepers, in my opinion, are. You know, they have strengths, and you know, both of them can make some very good saves. But neither is wonderful with their feet, and the way we play depends on goalkeepers who can really. You know, be a kind of sweeper keeper, and they're very hard to find, because, especially at this level, because the really good ones who can play like that are probably going to go to a club in a higher division. You know, I mean, I think the other thing is that you know, obviously something's been going on in the club with the departure of Craig Klein, but. It slightly worries me, actually, that although I'm a great supporter of Slavisa and the way he plays, I think that, you know, it must be remembered that he did sign a new contract recently. So he knew the system. If he hated the system so much, why did he sign a contract?
Great question.
Very recently, you know, he signed a contract as head coach, not manager. I know this is a bit foreign to English supporters, but that is what he signed up to. You know, he's there to actually coach the team. Now, of course, he should have, you know, a role in choosing players, but he knew what his role was because he signed a contract to that effect. And most clubs, all clubs, I think, used statistical information. And, of course, the signings last season with the same system were pretty good. So, you know, it's a bit of a lottery, the transfer market, in some respects. And I think that what worries me, actually, and this is only something I surmise, is, you know, whether Slavisa has been playing a kind of political game by not using certain players, you know, because they were signed in a way he didn't like or whatever. And I don't quite understand why, you know, for instance, Molo and Matt Graham,
yep.
Have been hardly used at all. I mean, Molo used to play for Marseille. You know, at one time. I mean, he seems to be a bit of a wild card. He comes from an itinerant family and, you know, he has quite an interesting background in some respects and a bit of a character, I think. But, you know, he showed that he might have something different, particularly off the bench when we're not scoring goals and we're not getting a result. But I think the use of young players has been positive. I get a sense that he's been making a political statement about the players he's been allotted. And this might, I can only think that it might lead to some tension within the squad. I don't know, but, you know, I mean, also the other person who, Suarez, left wing back, he's hardly played at all and came with a quite decent reputation of being in the Portugal under-21s, I think. And, you know, I mean, if they don't play very much, you know, you can't really know what they can do. I'm not sure a few games in the under-21s is a real substitute, but I think he might have think that he doesn't either trust them in the case of the Molos or whether Suarez is not suitable for the way we're playing. I don't know. But it seems, I mean, also the sidelining of Maddle totally, who, you know, it seems strange. I mean, he was actually going to leave the club. He's still here and he's hardly played at all. And he's had some, you know, indifferent games for Fulham, but I wouldn't say he's done a bad job for Fulham. And I would have thought with injuries, he could have been at least used you know, a little bit more personally. But, you know, it's so whether my question mark is whether things are going on behind the scenes which are not conducive totally for maximizing our resources to play well and win.
Yeah, it's great that you, Rob, broke it down that way, Roland, because that's why I wanted to ask you, through your eyes, the differences between last season and this season, and there are other factors, and you just went through it. So thank you for sharing your view on that to end the show. But before we go, one last time, can you just tell everyone how they can find your book?
My book is, my book can be purchased online. It's Being Fulham by Roland Jaccarello. That's Jaquarello. And it's at Amazon as a Kindle for $5.99. And it is in print at Lulu, which is www.lulu.com. So that's where you can find it in print for $9.99.
Okay,
so excellent. If you go to either of those, you can get it.
Okay, and I highly recommend all Fulham supporters reading this wonderful view of last season through the eyes of Roland Jaccarello. Roland, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Russ. That's great.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Cottage Talk. For my guest, Roland Jaccarello, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.